okay, I guess I get the concept of artificial intelligence. I've been, I guess, working toward that goal on an individual level for a number of years here. But what really is AI? What's possible through AI? And what's AI doing right now? I'm curious about this. And look, the Biden administration has announced the use of emergency powers, war powers, to monitor and regulate AI. This is not a bad thing, necessarily. I wonder what the industry, how it will affect the industry. It's emerging technology. It's raised the bar on human potential for accomplishment. And then the other side of that, destruction as well. Take a deep dive into that today with Ben Mayo and Sean Wright, security experts, as we get a look at AI. Deeper dive today on Voices.
Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
During big game season, we'd like to remind hunters that respecting private landowners and the access they provide is more important than ever. Positive relationships between hunters and landowners impacts all recreationalists. Please remember, respecting private land and building relationships with landowners protects hunting access opportunities. Hunting private land is a privilege. Ask first to hunt, fish, and recreate on private land and follow ethical fair chase hunting practices. It's up to us. Respect access. Protect the hunt. Visit fwp.mt.gov/it's up to us.
Got a couple of great guests here, and I'm really thankful that we can introduce them. They've got a seminar we'll talk about as well. It's free from VisionNet, and it's going on tomorrow at 10 o'clock. But here today is Ben Mayo, head of security and lead engineer for VisionNet. Good morning, Ben. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing good. I appreciate you being here. Your friend Sean Wright is with us as well, Senior Vice President, Global Information and Physical Security with UMG, and that's Universal Music Group. Good morning, Sean. How's it going?
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, guys, for being here. Appreciate this. So, Ben, I'm looking around. I know AI is here. It didn't strike me until, I guess, that little episode I described. Do we have to go to unusual measures now because of AI?
No, actually, you're utilizing AI every day, even if you're not aware of it. So you brought up that CAPTCHA example. That is an example of AI, specifically with machine learning. But some other applications that you might not be aware of is just like the face recognition to unlock your iPhone. That's utilizing AI.
Sean, 23 years of information and physical security experience. So in this industry, how has AI, from your standpoint, we got a lot to explain about what it is. It's been around for a long time. The focus now, though, seems to be heightened. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, so to Ben's point, I mean, AI, machine learning, has been around for quite some time, and it's been quite effective. However, it has been a fairly complex effort to do basic things. Until now, you know, the entire software industry has been developed around this user experience, which requires you know, very organized, structured data sets with data that's been tagged, and you know, all this back-end encoding that does something very specific, like what you referred to with CAPTCHA, and even things like spam, for example. Generative AI changes all of that. We can now suddenly communicate both as an input and as an output, and it understands what we say with full context and responds with a language and processes that we as humans can understand. This is a big fundamental shift. So, like, if you think about it, the entire software industry has been developed around this old way of doing things, but with generative AI, that changes everything. So the opportunities are massive.
Ben, what are you looking at for opportunities here? And of course, we'll talk about the security risk as well. I mean, that's the big backdrop here is the Biden administration looking at, well, initiating through executive orders some management of the development of AI. That's our backdrop here as well. But talk more about really what AI is and what it can do. What's the potential for the good and the harm?
Yeah, well, AI at the highest level is the simulation of human intelligence. You're trying to get a computer, a machine, to act as if it was a human. But some of the everyday applications of AI, like I mentioned, the facial recognition on your phone, navigation, so utilizing Google Maps or Apple to navigate through a city that you're unfamiliar with, or for me, even a city that I am familiar with, that is utilizing AI. It's taking real-time data from other users' cell phones, positions, and helping you determine the best route to get to your destination. Within the entertainment industry, we're seeing a lot of AI-generated content so that you don't have to spend all this studio money to, you know, produce massive effects in movies. I think something more closely related to the audience here in Montana is the utilization of AI in agriculture. So being able to identify diseased crops, identifying the soil content and things of that nature, utilizing satellite imagery to help you with your crop rotation so you can get the highest yield, things of that nature, that's stuff that companies like John Deere are utilizing today with AI. Those are some of the big benefits. There's definitely a lot of risks with AI, and I don't prescribe so much to the apocalyptic Terminator view, but there are things, you know, today and that we've experienced with biases due to training data, things for like facial recognition that could be utilized in a nefarious manner, weapons development, specifically bioweapons. So similar to how a hammer could be utilized as a tool to help you build your house, it can also be utilized as a tool to blunt somebody up against the head. AI is similar in that aspect, where AI that you can utilize to produce new and novel biomedical devices or new and novel medicines, that same technology that's developing that medicine can also help an actor that has ill intentions to develop a bioweapon.
Talk more about, and Sean, you can weigh in on this as well. Ben, it's sort of noted in your bio here as well. You take a purple team approach to security, meaning applying both offensive and defensive security practices. I think perhaps now, with even though it's not emerging, I'm going to call it an emerging technology, perhaps it is to our understanding. I think that's an interesting dynamic, that you have to play both offense and defense as this develops. How does that work?
Yeah, so the best way to defend your assets or your network is to know how an attacker thinks. So this new executive order from the Biden administration actually specifically calls out what's called red teaming. Red teaming is when you take offensive action against a defended position or offensive action against a system. So in this case, they want companies to utilize red teaming in order to help identify vulnerabilities within their AI systems before they're released to the public. And this is a similar thing that Sean and I deal with every day, is utilizing red teaming, offensive security, where we act as the bad guys or hire other companies to act as the bad guys to test our systems to help us identify those vulnerabilities so we can get them mitigated and patched before an actual threat actor attacks them. And that's one of the things that they're trying to address in this executive order, is pushing companies towards utilizing red teaming before they release some new AI product out to the world.
How long, Sean, does it take to, and maybe you comment on that as well, the dynamic of, you know, looking at possibilities and vulnerabilities at the same time? I don't suppose that's unusual. It seems like there's a high bar here or a high ceiling. How long does it take to discover some of these severe potential vulnerabilities?
In an environment, you know, these can be pretty complex. And I think it's pretty easy to identify vulnerabilities that are known and conduct what we call threat hunting and threat modeling, and looking at, you know, what risks might be present within a particular application or within the environment. Where it gets a little tricky is around this concept of zero-day vulnerabilities, which I don't know about you, Ben, but I've seen a pretty big uptick in zero-day vulnerabilities with the advent of generative AI. So yeah. I think we need to integrate generative AI within our own security practices, because I believe that the adversaries are doing just that, utilizing generative AI to identify zero-day vulnerabilities And then using those zero-day vulnerabilities that the vendors, the manufacturers of the products don't even know about, and then using those as ways to worm into, you know, our environment because it's an unknown. So those are the areas that could take a while to find, because if you can imagine, zero-day vulnerability requires some reverse engineering. But the use of generative AI can kind of accelerate the identification of that. So if you're not using generative AI within your security practice, boy, it could take you a long time. I mean, you may never find a zero-day vulnerability, and most companies don't.
What is zero-day vulnerability?
It's a zero-day vulnerability is something that is unknown to, let's say, Microsoft being a vendor. They have, you know, a variety of products, and within those products, I mean, they're always doing patching, you know, for like Windows servers or, you know, Windows desktop. But a zero-day vulnerability could be something that resides within the product that they don't even know about. They don't have a patch for. They don't have a fix for. It's something that an adversary has gone through and meticulously looked at their code to understand if there's anything in there that they can exploit that they don't know about. So that then translates to a vector for an adversary to go through to exploit an organization. So those zero days are unknown vulnerabilities or unknown things that are being utilized by an adversary that is the only entity that might know about them, but the rest of the world may not.
Ben, did you want to follow up on that real quick?
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of zero days, they can be very, very lucrative, selling for over $1 million if you are able to discover vulnerability. A lot of the places that are buying those are governments that are looking to exploit these systems.
Wow.
Along the same lines that Sean was talking about in terms of vulnerabilities and being exploited, what we've seen with generative AI is it's lowering the bar for attackers. So offensive security, which equates on the more criminal side to threat actors or hackers, is a very intricate skill set. And with generative AI, people that are a lot less skilled are now able to figure out some vulnerabilities and then have generative AI write code in order to exploit those vulnerabilities. So now they can do it at a larger scale, and there's more people that are now capable of doing that. And that is going to, that creates an issue for those people like Sean and I that are trying to defend organizations against cyber attacks.
That's Ben Mayo, head of security and lead engineer for VisionNet. And also Sean Wright is with us, senior vice president, global information and physical security. That's with Universal Music Group. These two are part of a panel which is being conducted by VisionNet. It takes place tomorrow online at 10 a.m. I'll talk more about that. Lots to cover as we come on back with more of Voices in just a bit. We're talking about the hives, the potential for, you know, harm, but also just the potential for good with artificial intelligence. Let me talk a bit about this seminar that you can get on tomorrow. Again, it's, you know, what generative AI is and what it isn't, I think is important to know too. Sean Wright and then Ben Mayo with us here today are a part of that discussion. Go to VisionNet, and it is, where did I put that? Vision.net. Vision.net, and you'll be able to sign up for this. It's free, and it's taking place tomorrow at 10 a.m. I appreciate you guys, folks, giving us a kind of a preview of that here today, Ben and Sean. Let's launch into this, and whoever wants to take it first, Ben, I guess we'll go with you on it, about the administration's move. They're concerned about, well, I guess a lot of things, but this emerging technology. So they're going to, well, I think the language is a little bit difficult to understand. They want AI companies to notify the government when developing any system that poses, quote, and this is from the Wall Street Journal, a serious risk to national security, national economic security, or national public health and safety. Ben, what does that mean to us?
Well, I think it's pretty arbitrary in that regard, and I believe it's left that way to be open to interpretation so that possibly the government can go in and make changes as they see fit. It's very interesting. They're doing this, that particular directive under the Defense Production Act, which has normally been reserved for wartime and national emergencies, but that's how they're going to try to get companies to adhere to it. In terms of like economic impact and things of that nature, what we saw last November with the release of ChatGPT is what has ushered in a lot of this momentum for people looking to regulate things, because somebody that has not been familiar with AI at all, and is specifically generative AI, and they see something like ChatGPT and the power it has, it can be kind of scary. And now it's multimodal, which means instead of utilizing just text, now you can utilize video and voice. And so there's definitely economic impact that can be had. These companies are worth tens of billions of dollars that are developing this generative AI. And as we talked about in the last segment, there is a lot of security concerns, both for private industry as well as the government. So looks like there's going to be some wide-reaching powers that they're going to try to reach for. And it's going to be interesting to see how they want to use the DPA, the Defense Production Act, to enforce those.
And there's, Sean, there's some pluses and minuses in this approach. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a start. There are some very specific pieces that are, I think, missing, actually, about within the EO. There's really no verbiage about training data, which makes it very difficult to understand the safety of models and the likely risks, because you have to understand the training data in order to understand that aspect. It's also really focused on regulating the actual model development and not in products. So it's requiring, it states specifically that you have to essentially register a foundational model, and then prove that you've gone through some sort of verification process to vet out any sort of like safety concerns. So this would be like OpenAI or Anthropic or any one of the foundational models. But it doesn't really talk about end products, applications that are using AI or generative AI or leveraging these frontier models. So it's kind of interesting. There seems to be a focus around foundational models, which is a small number of entities. And then there's some things that are like just inherently flawed from the very beginning, just right out of the gates with training data without really mentioning anything about training data. So I think it's going to be a development in process. It's going to have to evolve over time. Yeah. But I think it leaves the door open for, I think the good thing is it does leave the door open for product companies to leverage these foundational models to drive some form of application that is a generative AI app that's enabling some sort of business modernization.
We'll take a look at what our households might look like with artificial intelligence, but right now we're looking at the security aspect of it in light of President Biden signing an executive order invoking the Korean War Era Defense Production Act, which, again, I don't know if it's crisis management. Sean Wright is with us. He is a Senior Vice President, Global Information and Physical Security with UMG, Universal Music Group, and also Ben Mayo, Head of Security and Lead Engineer for VisionNet. I look at the use of these emergency powers in the executive order, and the industry is kind of accepting that, recognizing they need some sort of guidance there. What's to come of this? What comes out of this? Is there going to be a program or a committee, or do we have these executive orders overshadowing this industry from here on out?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly seems to be the direction. The first, we'll see what comes later in the details with this new executive order, but it's really focused on these frontier models, not necessarily the applications that are going to be serving organizations, and then requiring these frontier models like OpenAI or Anthropic to register their LLMs and to submit tests results for testing out bias and all these other things around ethics and whatnot. So I think we may see it evolve, but it seems to be very much focused on these like core foundational models and not necessarily all of these thousands of applications that are going to be developed on top of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what kind of framework is going to work, Ben, in this regard?
You know, it hasn't really been developed yet. But what I like about the EO is the fact that they are deeply involving NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They release a lot of frameworks. They've actually released a risk mitigation framework for AI that I think a lot of this is going to build off of. But as far as an overarching one, I'm not sure how much time it's going to take for them. A lot of it's unknown unknowns that they're not even aware about. So it has to be an adaptive framework that's flexible, but still puts those guardrails and best practices in place for companies to follow.
Will they get, Sean, or Ben, I'll throw it to you, Sean. Will they get a framework out of this, something that they can move forward with without necessarily having to have these executive orders applied?
Yeah, I mean, as Ben mentioned, NIST has been around for a long time, since 2005 or so. So they are vigorously working on an AI framework specifically for that. And I can tell you also that the companies that are providing these frontier models like Anthropic or OpenAI are also working very vigorously to build in their own guardrails to manage risk within their own models themselves, beyond just the AI frameworks that are going to probably come out of NIST. There's a few other ones too, like the CSA has one that's in development.
All right. OWASP. Stand by. I'm bumping up against the break, and we'll come on back. And I want to talk about the small, the medium, and the big businesses in Montana, how this might affect them as well as our households. It's AI Deeper Dive today.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
You know, that world that we were told to imagine years ago, it's kind of upon us quite a bit. And we're looking at artificial intelligence and the potential for, as we say, you know, accomplishment as well as destruction. So as Ben Mayo had said earlier, you're applying both offense and defensive security practices to kind of counteract what AI can do. We're talking about that in great detail today. And welcome back from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Ben Mayo is with us, head of security, lead engineer for VisionNet. That's vision.net. And Universal Music Group, let me pull that up over here, UMG, universalmusic.com, the senior vice president, global information and physical security of that organization, Sean Wright. Thank you guys both for being here. Once again, this is a free seminar that they are a part of, along with Sandy Dunn and Christina Henderson from the High Tech Business Alliance. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, go to VisionNet, vision.net, and you can get signed up there for free. It is generative AI is and isn't, and ensuring you harness its capabilities effectively. Thank you guys again, as I mentioned, for being here. Appreciate that. Let's fill in some blanks. I'll go back to you, Ben. I want to know, in the household, in the average household, How will AI enhance our lives? How will it possibly be a security threat to us?
Yeah, well, how it enhances your lives, let's run through a story here. You wake up in the morning, you check your smartwatch, and your smartwatch tells you that you got 7 hours of sleep with an hour and a half of REM sleep, that what your heart rate was and stuff like that, okay? Then you go to the bathroom and you utilize the bathroom, and then you get in a notification on that same smartwatch telling you different biomarkers that were gleaned from your morning bathroom routine. Okay. So it might give you some awareness of some possible health concerns that you should be aware of. You tell Alexa or your Google Home device to start you a cup of coffee. So by the time you're down there in the morning, your cup of coffee is hot and ready for you to go. Your refrigerator is on your Wi-Fi, and it is determined that you need to replace your water filter. It already has it queued up in your Amazon cart. It just needs you to hit go to order that for you. It also, utilizing computer vision, determines that your bananas are now a little too ripe. So it suggests ordering new bananas. Or maybe you already gave it the go-ahead to order those new bananas whenever it needs, and those are going to show up on your Instacart or DoorDash here in a couple minutes. So you get dressed. Again, you prompt your home device to tell you the latest weather and news. You get dressed, go and get in your driver, your fully drivable Tesla vehicle, and your Tesla, while you're drinking your coffee and reading the paper, drives you to work. all of that utilizing AI technologies. And thing is, the majority of that can be done today. So just imagine the things that are going to be able to be possible in just a couple years.
Wow. I'm not sure I want all of that convenience.
Right? So let's talk to security. Let's talk the risks for that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the McDonald's hot coffee lawsuit. All of a sudden, your coffee is not piping 180 degrees. You go to drink it and scold yourself. Instead of getting bananas ordered for you, maybe you accidentally get ricin ordered for you from some nefarious actor that has infiltrated your network. As far as your biomarkers, maybe someone's messing with those. Maybe you actually have conditions that need to be addressed, as such as your heart rate or other things, but somebody has manipulated that data showing that you are perfectly healthy. One of the scariest things is your connected car, right? Your connected car, this has already been demonstrated in the real world that many of these connected cars can be taken over, and driving and braking capabilities and acceleration capabilities can be taken over. And like I said, that is can be done today in some of these vehicles. Now, fortunately, the people that discovered the vulnerabilities in these vehicle systems have disclosed them in an ethical manner so that the vehicle companies could address them. But going back to that zero-day discussion, there could be actors that have discovered a zero-day vulnerability in these driving systems and can utilize that to take over your vehicle and cause you to get into an accident.
All right, stand by, because I got to ask you the question. How do we prepare against that at that household level? I'm going to bring in businesses. Sean Wright, again, with us. And why don't you talk about businesses? In Montana, 95+% of our businesses are small. What do small businesses and medium-sized businesses need to know about AI? I think it scares the heck out of us.
Yeah. So, you know, with generative AI, I think there's a lot of things that businesses can do that can kind of modernize their businesses and kind of make things more efficient for the workers. But I think one of the things that companies need to think about is the data that they're using to facilitate those transactions, whether or not that data is sensitive, and then really train people around, you know, kind of the same concepts as they would do anyway, making sure that they're not putting things that might be sensitive, company data, could be social security numbers or health data, whatever it might be, of patients, into these systems, because again, it's just you're handing that data off to someone else that you may not or may or may not have an established agreement with to protect that data. So it's really about making sure that the company understands what they're utilizing it for, whether or not there's anything that would be sensitive in the data that they're using to get use out of like a ChatGPT or a prompt, and then, you know, just ensuring that there's some like basic security controls in place around the data that they're using, and just an overall awareness within the employees, within the employee base, teaching them about what should and shouldn't be submitted through one of these prompts.
Going back to Ben Mayo, then back to the household. So then, who is going to be more responsible? Should it be ourselves for that kind of security? I guess maybe that's a leading question. I presume we're always best to do it ourselves. But, I mean, all those devices that you noted, can we trust them to be secure, so to speak? So do we need to do it, or do we trust Google to do it, so to speak, in our households?
Well, I'm a big believer that you're responsible for your own security.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing now is push from the government for what's called secure by design, where they're pushing companies to actually build security into their products as they go through the entire development process. Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, regardless if it's a physical product or software, security is often an afterthought, and it gets bolted on at the end,
mm-hmm.
or even worse, it gets bolted on after something's been deployed, and then they discover, then they got to go back and fix it. But initiatives like that are going to help secure these devices, so people can feel more secure and comfortable utilizing them. For me, some of those examples are stuff that I have in my house. So, like, my refrigerator has Wi-Fi, but being the paranoid security guy I am, I have not connected it to any Wi-Fi network. The more usability that any system has, the more vulnerabilities and attack surface it can have. Now, I don't want people to be scared and say, well, I'm not going to use any of that. I'm going to go to a flip phone. I'm going to disconnect and go off the grid or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we just need to be cognizant of how we're utilizing these technologies and try to think of how they might be able to be utilized against us and steps that we can take for ourselves to defend against any sort of attacks. And it's good to continue to do research and see what others are doing to protect themselves from devices within your household that could be used against you.
That's a great idea. I'm curious about that as well. Sean Wright, as we go back to looking at the business aspect of this, one thing that we had kind of said off air is that you're encouraging businesses to know when or be ready to deploy these assets, so to speak. But again, sort of the same question. I'm not sure small businesses, they don't need necessarily have the resources to hire an IT tech, so to speak. Maybe they need one. Maybe it's third party. But what's their approach to getting secure when it comes to AI?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to the data. To your point, you kind of hit it where small businesses may not necessarily have the resources. They may not even have a security group. I would highly recommend reaching out to a security firm that can help them. There's a few that I know of in the Missoula area that would be great. But, you know, reach out to those companies to get a handle on security in general. But I think it comes down to, again, I think the awareness and the training that goes into their campaigns for their employees to use it responsibly. I mean, if they're going to use ChatGPT to make their area of work better, well, then, you know, they should probably understand what they should and shouldn't be leveraging ChatGPT for, you know, what kind of data they're putting into it. You know, if they're simply writing like a policy, well, then that's cool. I mean, that's very good at that, actually. And they should definitely be leveraging it for that. But if they're putting in like company data into the policy, well, then maybe they shouldn't be doing that. Maybe they should just take the output of the generic and then just modify it, without using ChatGPT to do that for them.
My gosh, it goes fast. Tomorrow, FWP will be on. We'll talk about the Gray Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. Public comment period open now for that. The Home Run Pond Drawdown, the Eagles Roost Conservation Easement Scoping. A lot of public comment periods open. We'll get into that along with the ins and outs of Gray Wolf Management in Montana with FWP tomorrow. Here, it's Ben Mayo, Head of Security and Lead Engineer for VisionNet, vision.net, for more information on that. And Sean Wright is Senior Vice President, Global Information and Physical Security for Universal Music Group. The two are part of a panel along with Sandy Dunn that will explore generative AI and ensuring that you're able to harness its capabilities. Tomorrow, you can sign up at VisionNet. It starts at 10 o'clock, and again, it's free. Ben, I'm going to, let's see, now we got about maybe 3.5 minutes here. Let's talk about fake media, because I've seen a lot of examples of that already. And, of course, we deal in media. I'm trying to get truth out there. It has become quite a challenge, and AI, maybe it can help me, but right now it's got me scrambling.
You're right, Tom. It's a huge challenge. We're seeing images coming out of the Gaza conflict that are 100% fake, that mm-hmm. are showing atrocities. And it's getting people spun up, and whatever it is that fits each person's perspective, you're seeing these images come out of there, and then all of a sudden someone will notice, like, oh, wait a second, why does that person have 6 fingers on both their hands? It's like, well, fortunately, that's some ways at times, but it's getting better at times that you can recognize some of these fake images. So moving into the 2024 election season, what we have with the Ukraine conflict and with Gaza, people need to be very cognizant of that there's people out there with agendas that are creating this fake media and these fake images. And you just got to question whether or not it's true. The executive order that came out last week is trying to address some of that, utilizing, trying to get companies to utilize a watermarking system to identify generative AI content, but the technology is not there yet for that to work, and the bad guys aren't going to follow those rules anyways. So just asking that people be very aware that just because an image is on a computer and it looks real, or even a video that has someone's voice and they're talking, it's not necessarily going to be them. That's what's called a deep fake. And to touch on some scams that we're seeing, you've got to be very careful with these deep fakes. They can sample your voice for a short period of time and then go and call your grandma and say, hey, grandma, you know, I'm stuck outside of Chico, California. My car broke down. Can you wire me money to this Western Union at the gas station? And grandma thinks it's them because it sounds just like Johnny, and they wire the money. So something like coming up with a family password to help identify that somebody is who they are would be a good idea.
Ah, I like that. Sean, you can either comment on that, or I'm going to throw another one out there about ethics, because this is not the first time our understanding or our ethics have lagged behind our capabilities. It seems we're in a precarious place here, but as a security expert, or maybe just as a human being, what keeps you up at night when you think about AI?
I mean, for me, it's more or less about the security stuff. I mean, I'm a security practitioner. It's what I've done my whole life. When I look at building security programs, one of the things is what we kind of talked about earlier is how do I get ahead of the adversaries? They're rapidly coming out with ways to get around our security controls. They're rapidly figuring out new ways to exploit applications that can lead them into an organization without detection. So those are really the things that are keeping me up at night.
Yeah.
It's this quick involvement of adversary activity, and we're seeing a super high level of, we're seeing a big increase in that.
Appreciate you guys being on, filled in a lot of information for us. We'll look to hear more. Ben Mayo and Sean Wright, thanks again for joining us for the podcast. And join us daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana, a live issue-oriented talk show heard daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on local stations all across Montana.